Hi there, this is Alan Tudyk. I'm Wash. And at times I will wash myself just when I get dirty. This is Hypeable Podcast. Talk about Firefly, why don't you?
Welcome, everybody, back to Rewatchable, a podcast brought to you from the folks at Hypeable.com. That's H-Y-P-A-B-L-E.com. And we are currently rewatching one of our favorite television shows, Firefly, by Joss Whedon. We're starting to get to the end of the series, and right now we are up to the episode called Trash. So before we get into today's episode, I'd just like to recap how you can get in touch with us. You can send us a tweet at re_watchable. You can send us an email at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Or you can post over on the podcast section on hypeable.com. Like I said, we're going to be talking about the episode Trash, this time where we meet somebody who we have met before. So to give a brief synopsis of what happens here, Mal goes to meet up with an old friend, Monty. They're doing a bit of regular old-fashioned smuggling. And in the process of chatting with Monty, Mal realizes that Monty, who's a confirmed bachelor, has just gotten married. And when he meets the wife attacks him because it's our good old friend Safran, played by Christina Hendricks of Mad Men fame. If we remember, she was the person who was Mal's wife on the episode Our Mrs. Reynolds. So they get into a bit of a tussle, and soon enough Monty realizes that his wife is not exactly who she says she is, and he abandons her on the planet. She ends up stowing away aboard Serenity, and she has a foolproof, supposedly, job that she wants to hire Mal and the crew to do with her, and she'll basically make it monetarily worth their while if they help her. And the reason that she needs their help is she says it's not a one-person job, so that's why she needs their assistance in doing it. So things seem to kind of go along to plan as they all plot on how they're going to pull this off. And it turns out, as you would expect, with Safran, or Yosef Bridge, as Mal ends up calling her, things start to go south in a hurry. We end up with Safran pretty much double-crossing everybody in town, Mal ending up naked in the desert, and you just when you think, all is lost, there's Inara to save the day at the end, which is sort of a really brilliant bit of turnaround at the end of the episode. It's definitely an ending that I know when I saw the first time, I did not think that was going to happen, and I really love the ending for this. So why don't we get into what our reactions are to this particular episode? I know it's one of my favorite ones. I really love it on a number of levels, and I really, really think Christina Hendricks was terrific coming back and reprising her role as Safran, or as, like I said, Mal calls her, Yosef Bridge, because God only knows what her real name is. So how about you guys? What did you think of this episode?
I really enjoyed this episode. I wasn't on the last one either, but I loved War Stories as well. This pair of episodes was really great. Just funny and the adventure, like, they had just about everything, and it's watching these two, for some reason it finally, like, clicked why people love this show so much. Like, I mean, I've liked it so far, but I haven't, like, fallen in love yet, and I'm pretty sure these two episodes are what have kind of driven me to love this show. But yeah, no, Trash was really, really fun, and I love that Kaylee kind of gets a moment in the sun, like, to kind of make the plan and kind of be in charge a little bit, and I really did just love the whole thing.
I like this one. I don't love it. It's fun, and the ending is really what does it for me, that really saves it. Like, it's kind of just your, feels like an average caper, not the geisha doll caper that they're talking about, but
the bobble-headed geisha dolls.
But I mean, it's fun to see the crew coming together to do things, but it's not exceptional to me the way some of the episodes are, but I do like it.
Yeah, I do really like that line of Inara's about, so Mal, what exactly was our take on the bobbly head geisha doll caper? I can't even imagine how that went down. Like, and who in the world is smuggling bobbly-headed geisha dolls, and who wants them? I mean, it's just so wrong on so many levels. It's so
right?
funny.
That was my question, too. I was like, who is looking for bobble geisha dolls, like bobblehead geisha dolls? Why is that in demand? Like, yeah, that was my question, too.
Yeah.
And Mal's so defensive. He's like, people love those dolls!
Mal Reynolds, closet bobbly head geisha doll lover. You know he has one in his little in his cabin, and he pokes the head every so often, and it bobbles
at
him.
Oh, of course.
All right, so why don't we talk about the episode? And it's an interesting. Let's try that again. It's an interesting episode because it comes at a point where they're sort of in between. In the previous episode, they've taken all their money where they were basically, you know, sitting pretty on all the money they made on that aerial drug bust. And Zoe had to collect it all to give to Nishka to ransom Wash back. And even though they end up rescuing Mal and rescuing Wash, what they didn't rescue was their cash back. So now they're back to needing the work. Which I don't know if everybody figured that out, but that's why they're going from relative prosperity to, oh, we have to do all these like really kind of dumb low-end jobs again, because even though they got Mal and Wash back, they don't have any more cash anymore. So it's back to doing the good old smuggling and running from the Alliance trick again. So they're kind of all, it's sort of like a transition point where they're all kind of, you know, where are we at? What are we doing? And Inara and Mal have this really great scene where Inara lets him know that, you know, things aren't going really well. And Mal accuses her of not speaking frankly and trying to pull her womanly wiles on her. What did you think of that scene between Mal and Inara? And did you side with anybody in particular in that scene?
I loved that scene. I thought it was really telling that Mal thinks that she has this ability and that because of her training and all that, that she has these special abilities to manipulate men. And so he's, you know, thinking that she's been working it on him and, you know, that's why he's been thinking the way he has and all of that stuff. Like, I just loved that whole scene because you get both him being completely serious about her, you know, him, her thinking that he's keeping her from her clients and him thinking that she's trying to manipulate him all the time. Like, I loved this whole scene. It's probably my favorite scene of the episode. And I just, it had everything. It was kind of funny. It was really serious in moments and seconds. So yeah, no, I love the whole scene though.
Who did you want to agree with more in the argument? Did you want to side more with Mal or did you want to side more with Inara?
Oh, I found myself siding with Inara. I think she had it right. I think he has been keeping her away from areas where she could get to clients. I definitely think she had it more in the right.
I love that scene. It's very telling about how Mal and Inara's relationship is, but I was definitely siding with Inara because she asked Mal to come talk to her and she's being pleasant and he just comes in so defensive and just kind of steps on everything when she's just like, come talk to me, I have something to tell you, and he's just going crazy in there. But I mean, I don't know if he's doing anything like that for her to her on purpose, but maybe subconsciously is trying to keep her away from clients because he disapproves and is jealous of it. But I definitely was on Inara's side there.
I love the whole discussion between them. I love when it comes down to it is they start arguing over the nuances of the word petty as if you know, like as if that makes it any better. And it's funny because like if you look up what the Chinese is, because the whole conversation is all about, well, there are nuances, there are different shades of meaning to the word. So do you want to know what the alternative shades of meaning to the word are besides petty? It could also mean small and tedious or trivial or trifling. So those were his real big choices. He could could have taken petty tea. I love the small and tedious. That's just so, like, each one is worse than the next. So really, I have to give props to Mal. There is no better translation of that word.
Yeah.
But it was really fun to watch them interact like that. So what's interesting is after they have that scene is you then see him transition down to the cargo bay and pop the hatch on Bridget, or like I said, Yosef Bridge, whatever we want to call her, is down there. And then from there, we go to the scene in the galley. So it's some time in between Mal having that, you know, conflict with Inara to the galley is a scene that takes place off camera where he clues her in on what he's going to do and they arrange for the double cross. So here's the question. How do you think that off camera scene went down?
That's interesting. You know, I didn't even put that together. Like that there obviously was a conversation they had off screen. That's, yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah, that must have been interesting considering how this one ended, how this conversation ended. Like, I'm sure it was a heated discussion.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, it's not just Inara who's in on it. They're all in on it because, like, when Inara turns up at the end, she is rattling on, and one of her lines is, well, I was afraid that we would have given ourselves away. I mean, some of the crew's performances weren't as nuanced as I would have liked. So, obviously, they were all in on it at some point. So, it's really curious. I'm really curious to know at what point did Mal clue them all in and how this all went down. I mean, it's really kind of fun to think about.
Well, and is it funny that I kind of wondered if they didn't just go along with the whole thing, like kind of flying by the seat of their pants the whole time, and Inara at the end just said, oh, we were playing you.
Right.
Like, I kind of wondered if they actually had a plan to double cross her, or if Inara was just like, I'm going to get one on her. I'm going to tell her that we were all in on this, and, you know, it's going to throw her for a loop. Like, I kind of wondered, but yeah, no, they definitely were trying to double cross.
Yeah. But that's an excellent point that Inara just turned it around. And, you know, obviously she was in on the thing the whole time.
It, right.
She wouldn't have been there otherwise because she wasn't around to hear the details otherwise. But yeah. So did she just throw in that little extra dig and it wasn't true and she's a really good actress, or was it really, really planned that way? So they bring Yosef Bridge into the galley and she starts interacting with the crew, and everybody has a different reaction to Mal bringing her in. Does anybody have a favorite person who has a reaction to her walking in? I know I have my personal favorite. Anybody have a favorite of who reacts and how they react to her being back on the boat?
My favorite is after they've done, like, talked about the plan, when Zoe is really pissed off and Saffron's like, you know, all you got to do to be rich is to get over it. And then she punches her in the face and then says, I'm in. That's my favorite.
Yeah, that's definitely a highlight. I loved Zoe in this whole thing. So yeah, I'd say that's probably one part of mine too.
Yeah, that's definitely mine too. And for me, it's like payback for Wash, because the last time she landed Wash flat on his ass, if you remember that from our Mrs. Reynolds. So it is definitely like, Zoe, you know, payback for Wash. Boom, I'm flattening you. I really like that. But I also like Wash's reaction to the whole thing too. Like, what is she doing on this boat? What did I miss? I love him also, which is pretty cool. So they all come up with the plot. And what's really fun, I think, is the fact that Kaylee has this really major role in figuring out how they're going to pull off the heist. Because obviously Saffron has the keys to get in, but that's all she's got. She doesn't have any other clue on how she's going to pull this off, because she can't walk out the door with this Lassiter gun that they're all trying to steal. So I know that I really enjoyed the fact that it was Kaylee who came up with the plan on how they were going to do it. How did you guys feel about Kaylee being the one in charge of this?
She is very, very quickly becoming my favorite character on the show. So seeing her get to step up and Wash kind of saying, I think it was Wash that said, like, well, Kaylee came up with it, you know, go ahead, Kaylee. And she just kind of steps in and's like, well, yeah, we'll just throw it in the trash. Like, I loved the whole thing. I love that she gets her moment in the sun, and rather than just saving the day by fixing some engine part or whatever, she came up with the whole scheme, and I just love that whole thing.
I love seeing how clever she is. Like, you sort of get a surface impression that she's a little ditzy or something just because she's got this innocence to her, but then under the surface, there's so much more to it, and there's this very clever layer, and that's really fun to see come out to play, as it were.
Yeah, I think Kaylee is a lot smarter than people frequently give her credit for being. And she, as you said, she is clever and intuitive, and she picks up on things. I mean, I think people don't give her enough credit a lot of the times because she doesn't have that pause button on her mouth, and she just says, she just blurts out whatever she's thinking. And sometimes what she's thinking is a little bit naive in worldly experience-wise, but she is incredibly clever, and it was great to see her having the, you know, what was going to be the great moment here. Plus, she also did the reprogramming. I mean, I felt like Kaylee was the one who not only devised the plan of throwing it in the trash, but she was also the one who knew how to reprogram this computer circuit or whatever to get that to happen. So she was really very integral in the whole thing. Wash, you needed the ace pilot who could, you know, hold it steady.
Props to Wash. Like, I'm watching this episode and they're all just like, Wash, keep it steady. Like, they all just keep yelling at him. And I'm like, that's not an easy thing to do. Like, he's holding it steady enough that they're not falling off the edge of the ship as it's, you know, sitting underneath this trash barge. Like, I was like, go Wash.
Yeah, like one false move and they're all pancakes smushed against the top. Yeah, exactly. I also liked as Kaylee is there instructing Jane as to what to do, because obviously Jane is the first person to go out there, and she's like, okay, take this, put it up there, it's hot. Like, when Kaylee's going, Jane, it's hot, be careful. It's funny because I was thinking, why does she care if it's warm? And I'm like, oh no, she means it's hot as in it's like hot wired.
Like, it's live.
It's live. Yeah. I didn't catch that at first. Did you guys catch that at first?
I did, just because we use that term all the time talking about mics. Like, I do some music stuff and we talk about it all the time. So when she said it's hot, I assumed she meant like it's live, it's active. And so I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, it's powered on, baby. Yeah. And then boom, Jane gets zapped. And there's little Zoe who weighs, what, like 105 pounds trying to stop Jane from sliding off the ship. I'm like, oh my God. Yeah, that's going
to
go well.
Yeah, as soon as he started to slide, I was like, uh-oh. Like, that's not going to end well because he's not light. Like, oh boy.
Right. So I love that, you know, so they get him below and they put Jane into the care of Simon. So now it's like, okay, lost one crew member, next. You know, so now it's Zoe's turn to get up there with her. And I love now because we've taken the person on the crew who's like 5 foot nothing. Yeah, Wash, if it wasn't hard enough before, now you've lost another 12 inches. See what you're going to do. I loved as Zoe's going, Kaylee, can you hurry up? Kaylee, hurry up, Kaylee. Keep Kaylee. And she's like, almost, almost. And Zoe's like, anytime now, Kaylee, you got, you know. And she gets her just before they get mushed. I thought that was like, oh boy, it shows you how like cool and calm Zoe is, because she was just so focused on, come on, come on. I'm not going to let you know what's incoming. I thought that was really cool for Zoe to do that. So we end up with that whole end working out fine. You know, there's other than like Jane getting knocked out, the rest of that works out. So they have upheld their end of the bargain. Meanwhile, you have Mal and Yosef Bridge down on the fancy schmancy gated community section of the planet, and they get in, and the big reveal, although we probably shouldn't be too surprised, is that Yosef Bridge, or Yolanda as she was known to this particular gentleman, Duran, was his wife from 6 years ago. And she had returned to him. That was really interesting. Did it surprise you that she's basically been, you know, kind of sleeping her way around from world to world?
Not really. I mean, it took me like quickly. I was surprised that this guy and she had a history, but then I was like, well, of course they did, because how else did she get all this information about the house and know about the pistol? Like, obviously. So after the momentary surprise, I was like, well, duh, of course.
Yeah, I sort of scolded myself. I was like, oh, I should have seen that coming. Like, oh, how dare I not realize? Yeah, she had to have had something going on with this guy or she wouldn't have known anything. So, yeah, no, I was a little taken aback, but I didn't expect it at first.
What I thought was really cool is the fact that I guess she got out of there with the help of Heinrich, the security guy. And for whatever reason, your wife absconds with the security guy who dies. And apparently we didn't change the codes. I'm like, really? You're a security idiot.
And I also love how in that scene, Mal just walks out of the room with the Lassiter in his hand, walks to the trash, puts it in, closes it, hits the button. Like, this guy does not even think about stopping him.
Yeah, yeah. Like the do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Nobody know what I'm doing right now.
Just nobody's paying attention to me. Like, it was so great just watching him sneak around in the background.
What I thought was really interesting was, I guess, the point where Mal starts connecting a bunch of the dots. I mean, obviously, when he met her the first time, she was completely willing to fry the ship and the crew to get, you know, the salvage aboard it. And she wasn't going to think very much about, you know, whose lives were forfeit for that. But he hears the information about Heinrich and he's starting to realize that, whoa, this is probably the point where she started out. And she was, even at that point, willing to cut loose people who had outlived their usefulness to her. So I think it kind of let him know the level of ruthlessness that she was capable of. If he did not understand it before, he certainly understood it then. But it also brings up another point. As he's observing her, he ends up realizing that this is maybe the one person she really cares about and doesn't want him to think badly of her. What did you guys think of that information that Mal just totally reads right through her and what her relationship with this guy was like?
Yeah, it was definitely very intuitive of Mal to figure out this seems to be the one guy she cares about his opinions. And I didn't catch it at first, but she definitely, you know, it was a little more guarded and worried the entire sequence with him in it. But yeah, no, it was just very good of Mal to catch on to that because I had no idea. And then later on we see, you know, how serious it is. And she tries to kind of play it off. And you can tell that there's something about this guy that really got to her.
I like that it also tells us that Mal has learned his lesson. Like, he's not trusting a single thing she says to him. Like, he's just not buying her BS. So he's quickly reading in things that he wouldn't have given a second glance to the first time they'd met. But now he's, like, looking below the surface, and he kind of knows the kind of person she is, so is able to read these cues that he wouldn't have if she hadn't double-crossed him in the first place.
Yeah, he's totally playing the game on a higher level, I would say, this time than he did the previous time. Yeah, I mean, definitely. He gets what's going on here, and he's not. I mean, there's a couple of places where he's like, nope, we're not doing it this way, we're doing it that way. Like, you can tell he's definitely going to be like, I'm not going to get fooled this time. I really liked the part where he is looking at her and says, you know, I've seen you with your clothes off, but I think this is the first time I've seen you naked. And I think that's really, really true, that this is the first time anybody has ever totally seen right through her. And the fact that she didn't want to be thought badly of by this person. Did it remind you a little bit of Jane from a couple episodes ago where he didn't want the crew to know what he did?
From Ariel?
Yeah.
Yeah, it did. I immediately made that connection. I was like, wow, Mal's just making it through the crew here, isn't he? He's seen Jane at his lowest. He's now seeing Saffron, like, she's not on the crew, but he's seeing her completely stripped down, to seeing exactly who she is and her at her lowest point. Like, yeah, he's just kind of making it through the crew here now.
It's interesting to see that there are so many characters who put up these fronts of not wanting people around them or trying to push people away. And Mal just sees right through it to see that they want these connections. And it's so interesting to see that so few people really are that lone wolf that they claim to be in this show, but they all are really looking for connections no matter how much they say they aren't.
Yeah, like, she does have feelings. She is not as completely cold-hearted, you know, and can't feel anything as she'd really like you to believe. I mean, basically, Mal found her tell is what it is. I mean, it's like reading through a poker player. He's got her. He just totally has her. I think it's a incredibly hard thing for her to realize that, you know, hello, somebody has just found you out. I think that's a really, really tough thing for her to swallow. And the fact that she can't see, you know, the tears aren't really manipulating him or what have you. So here's the thing. Once they have that discussion, she does manage to get the weapon away from him. Do you think that was part of the plan, that Mal was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to let her disarm me and, you know, I'm going to let her get away thinking she's going to go get this gun? Or do you think that was not part of the plan to begin with?
I have a hard time believing that Mal didn't notice his gun being taken. Like, he's so aware of things like that, that I'd really be surprised if he hadn't noticed.
Yeah. Watching it, I was in disbelief that he didn't realize she was doing it. And then, you know, we find out from Inara at the end that they were kind of playing her, and I was like, okay, he clearly knew what she was doing, but he let her do it. So, yeah, I think it was all a part of the plan that she kind of gets one over on him and thinks she's got the, you know, she's got the gold and she's going to get the Laster, but ends up getting screwed over in the end.
And if Inara is just supposed to be the failsafe, maybe it's kind of a peace offering from Mal to Inara after their fight, that you get to play this part that we established, and I'm going to let you do it as an apology.
Right. Like, I was thinking that Inara's part of the deal was just, Inara, I need you to go get the gun before she ever gets there. And this way, you know, then you rejoin us in your shuttle and we'll be out of the quadrant before she can even figure out, you know, we've double crossed her. I mean, to me, that was what probably the original plan was, only Inara wanted to have a little more fun with it than they had intended. And I do think, too, that Mal knew that he was being disarmed. But I figure he thought, you know, this is going to play out really just fine, because she's going to say, okay, I'm leaving now, I have you at gunpoint. And he's going to be like, yeah, all right, whatever, you got me. And it didn't matter in the plan. Where I think he didn't see it coming was when she was going to add that extra bit of humiliation in, because he had thrown her the line about, I've seen you naked. So she couldn't let that stand. She had to one-up it and have him ditch the clothing. So that was fun. And I don't know that seeing a naked Nathan Fillion is ever really a bad thing. So,
true story.
I know that, like, when I turned, I was watching it on DVD, and when I turned on to the episode screen, it was him sitting naked in the desert. And looking at that, I was like, uh-oh. So it was very fitting. Like, it all just kind of worked really well.
Yeah. And it's funny, because, like, I know a question that a lot of people have is, like, what is that, like, big black patch on his thigh, which is a tattoo? It's actually his own body art. It's not like they put it in there for the show. Apparently what happened is, when Nathan Fillion was 19 years old, he went out and got this tattoo. And it's some sort of Egyptology symbol that he now regrets. He was like, yeah, when I was like I'm loosely paraphrasing it, but the paraphrase of it is, yeah, when I was 19 and a teenager, I was all into Egypt and this culture and everything they did and what have you. He goes, and was I motivated enough to save money and go to Egypt to see all of this? No, but I was dumb enough to get it tattooed on my thigh. So, yeah, he was not, he's not, I mean, God only knows if it's been removed. I have no idea if it's still there or not. But that's the story behind the tattoo. And I mean, I don't want to make it sound like Nathan Fillion is ancient, but the point at which Nathan Fillion would have been 19 years old, tattooing was not like the big rage that it is now. I mean, not at all. I mean, because Nathan Fillion's what, like just past 40, right? Like 41, 42 at this point. Like when he would have been 19 years old, like tattooing was like, it wasn't like the biggest thing. So for him to at 19 have done that, it's just like, think about those tattoos, folks. Are you going to want that 30 years later? Think about it, you know?
So. Yeah. I mean, it's very commonplace now, but you're right. 19 years ago, 20 years ago, yeah, it was not as commonplace. It definitely was different of him to do that. So yeah. That is kind of weird.
Yeah. Fortunately for him, it's on his thigh. It's like another thing when you have it like right on your bicep or something, and it's like, yeah, okay, yeah, you can't hide that, but at least on his butt cheek, sort of, you could hide it. So anyway, bit of Firefly trivia for you on naked Nathan Fillion and what he looks like. So anyway, so getting back to our show, now that we've like been obsessing over Nathan and his body art, so we end up with him being stranded out there in the desert, and then we have Inara, who shows up there at the end, and there's Yosaf Bridge digging in the trash, and I just love that she is covered with muck by the time Inara gets her attention. I really enjoy the contrast between her and Inara in that like very lacy little outfit and everything. And she's just standing there with the gun and pointing it at her. How much did you guys love that scene?
It's so great. Like Saffron, Yosaf Bridge is covered in that trash, which is pretty appropriate for her. And then just, you know, she's trying to pull one over on everyone. And then actually Inara's like, no, just kidding. You suck. Like,
I thought it was a nice kind of bookend that she sneaks onto Serenity in like the trash. And at the end of the episode, again, is covered in trash, trying to find this laser pistol that Inara's gotten way before she ever showed up.
There are a couple of really big, you know, zingers and high points just in that little last scene. Do you guys have a specific favorite moment within that? Because Inara has a couple of just like, zap, gotcha. Ooh, gotcha again. Let's get you one more time. Do you have any part of that little sequence that you like better than any of the other parts?
I really like when she tries to fire the gun. She's like, let's see if it still works. And Saffron like flinches really hard. That's probably my favorite part.
And then she pulls out the other one and says, oh, but this one does.
It's like, that. Oh, well.
Yeah. The part that I love, I do really enjoy some of the performances of the crew weren't as nuanced as I thought it was. So I do like that. But I think my favorite is the slow-mo close of the lid. So you know she's going to be stuck in there with no light, with the smelly garbage.
And then she says, you're not going to die. We'll call somebody. They'll come pick you up.
Yeah. The authorities are going to come and get her. I just, to me, the slow-mo close just sort of makes it totally. I love it. I love it.
And she's going, I have a condition.
Yes. I mean, lying to the end. It's like, yes, and I have seized you in. Goodbye. I love that. That's like one of my favorite things ever. So while all of this is going on, there's an entirely other plot point going on, and that's what's going on in the life of Simon and River and Jane. And we had talked about back on Ariel how Jane had betrayed Simon and River and then, you know, thought a bit better of it, and Mal figured it out and threatened him. And now we come to realize that River has pieced it together also. and, you know, relays that information to Simon, and Simon decides how he's going to get his point across to Jane. What did you think of the confrontation between Simon and Jane on the, like, just strapped down a mobile on, you know, his table there? How did you guys like that scene?
I could not help but think how incredibly classy of Simon not to lord it over Jane and try and threaten him, which would have been the easy way out, would be to threaten Jane back and kind of, you know, get in his face. In the complete opposite of what you expect, Simon, you know, plays the kindness card and says, when you're strapped to this table, you never have to worry. Like, I'm your medic and you're part of my crew. And, you know, it's so cute and so Simon. I loved it.
But at the same time, he is kind of threatening him. Like, just his words completely are the opposite of kind of what he's doing. Jane is completely vulnerable, and Simon is making sure he's very aware of how vulnerable he is to whatever Simon wants to do with him. He's, you know, sticking him with the needle and using all this equipment. Like, in a way, it very much is a threat that, you know, you need me and I could do whatever I want to. I'm not going to, but I could. But he doesn't have to say it. He just does it.
Yeah, and it's so calm. He's not raising his voice. He's just, like, very matter-of-fact of, so, this is how it is. I'm going to use tiny words. Get what I'm saying, Jane? I just love how smooth he is about the entire thing. And then we have River, who's just observing the entire thing. And her comment is one that you see. It's another, I think, really iconic Firefly line. You see it all over the place on t-shirts, on bumper stickers, on everything you can think of. I think it was like my status on Facebook for like forever. In fact, maybe it still is. I should probably check on that. So is the line also, I can kill you with my brain. How fantastic is that line? And do we think it's true?
It's just so adorable. Like, I mean, it's terrifying because it's creepy, but that's just River. She's creepy and yet completely adorable at the same time. I would think it could possibly be true. I don't know if she actually means, like, killing him with just her brain, or if she means that, like, her brain has given her a million different ways to kill him. Like, we saw her in the last episode pick up a gun and without looking kill three people. So I don't know what she meant entirely by that, but I loved it, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, I was gonna say that after the last episode, I really wouldn't doubt River could do just about anything she says she can do, or, no pun intended, but puts her mind to.
Yeah, seriously, right? Like, because, like, we don't know. Like, oh my gosh, like, that's, like, kind of horrible to think about. What does antagonized River look like? I mean, I don't know that we've ever really seen antagonized River. And maybe that's a question. What do you think it would take to truly antagonize River?
Going after Simon, hurting Simon, I think would be the breaking point for her.
Or at this point, possibly Kaylee, too. Because I think she kind of sees Kaylee as an equal and as a friend. And I think if you go after the wrong person, I think she'd be on you in a second.
Yeah, certainly last episode, she and Kaylee started to form a bond together. So yeah, I would agree. But I definitely think anybody comes after Simon, that she's going to be just as protective of Simon as he is of her. I think that would absolutely be her breaking point without any question. Before we get into some of our favorite lines and favorite scenes, anything else anybody wants to bring up?
I kind of wanted to talk a little about how this episode is very much about the girl power and how, you know, there's Saffron who comes up with the plan and there's Kaylee who kind of completes it. And then Jane's the one who gets knocked out. So it has to be Zoe and Kaylee to get the dumpster to work. And then Inara's the one who, you know, confronts Saffron at the end while Mal's stuck naked in the desert. So I just really enjoy how this one is very much about the power of the women in the show.
Yeah, and each one of them playing to their skill sets. Like we were saying, Kaylee doesn't get a lot of credit for just how smart she is. And the fact that the guys really respect her. You know, it was like, okay, yeah, Kaylee, this is your area of expertise. they don't question that that plan is going to work or not. They know, okay, she knows what she's talking about. We're going to respect that, and we're going to go with this plan because it's a solid plan. That's really cool.
And I like that they can do that and do this clearly girl power episode without, like, calling attention to it. Like, look at all these girls being amazing. Like, no, they just do it. That's just how they are. They're fabulous, and we're just going to utilize it all in one episode. Like, look at how great they are. I like that they didn't point that out to you and, you know, smack you over the head with it.
Right. I also like that the confrontation between Saffron and Inara isn't, you know, the cat fight, because that would be just so stereotypical and easy. The nature of the fight is, I'm smarter than you, and I'm just going to make you pay to let you know how much we all outsmarted you. I thought that was really cool, because it would be so simplistic to pull it into, like, this hair-pulling kind of situation, and that's not what is done at all.
Yeah, it's these, they're strong human beings. They're not just strong women, but when you put it all together, like, yeah, it's all the women being awesome in this episode, but there's nothing really brought attention to the fact that they are women, just that they're strong human beings taking part in this story.
I also loved that we got a brief moment between Zoe and Inara, because I don't know if we get a lot of that. It was something that when they started the conversation, I went, wow, like, these two characters don't interact all that much. Like, that's kind of weird. And yet they're both obviously very important to Mal. And so I loved seeing them. It was really brief, but just kind of getting an idea of how they both see each other in relationship to Mal.
That's also the scene, I think, where, kind of going back to earlier in the episode, we were talking about when, you know, if they had plotted all the story, the double cross ahead of time, that's when I kind of thought that the plan, they had double crossed it and everyone was involved, that the two of them talking and in a place that Saffron would see them.
Right.
So that scene planned. Is where it tells it to me. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. That was a plan. That was meant to have been observed that, yeah, there was dissension. But I liked also Zoe's line about Captain ain't wrong. You know, like, you've got a point. I'm not saying we shouldn't consider it, but the captain's not wrong here. I liked that. I thought it was, I think what's really cool about it is you get the sense that Zoe has absolutely listened to the concerns of all parties, and she hasn't dismissed what Inara's needs are for being invalid. She just feels like it doesn't take as big of a priority as working this other job at the moment. So I think that's pretty cool. All right, so why don't we move into what were some of our favorite lines this time? And there are so many in this. It's a really good one just to make you laugh at a lot of different things. So, Caitlin, why don't we start with you? What kind of line did you pick out that's your favorite this time?
Mine came from the scene where Jane is telling Simon and River to stay in their room while Saffron's around, because she would turn them in. And Jane says, you know, as a rule, I say girl folk ain't to be trusted. And River just says, Jane is a girl's name. Like, and they have that whole conversation. He's like, don't start on that. And he's being really crude. And Simon's like, I'm trying to think of a way you could be more crude, and it's just not coming to me. But the whole Jane is a girl's name, like, that cracks me up.
I know, that thought of, do we really want to see Jane strip off? I don't know. That's a threat right there. Kristen, how about you? What was your favorite line?
Mine actually comes from Monty. It's from the very beginning of the episode, when we first see Saffron, and they kind of Mal reveals her, and Monty's leaving in his ship, and he's yelling down, "Damn you, Bridget! Damn you to Hades! You broke my heart in a million pieces! You made me love you, and then I shaved my beard for you, devil woman!" I just loved the whole thing. Watching the look on Mal's face as this guy who is clearly his friend is just screaming at this woman who's been wreaking havoc. I love the whole thing. It was great.
Yeah, and the guy who plays him, I forget his name, but he's like this character actor that ends up like in Westerns, and he always plays like the heavy very frequently, and he does usually have like the beard or the mustache and everything with it, so it was pretty funny. He's also in Buffy. I forget who he played on Buffy. If Selena was on here, she would know who he was, but he was also a Buffy actor. So yeah, that's really hysterical line. My favorite was the exchange between Mal and Saffron as he's, you know, kind of patting her down to make sure that she isn't armed. And he says, I just don't want you pulling a pistol out of anywhere. And he's, you know, giving her the whole pat down. And she goes, you missed a spot. And then he answers, can't miss a place you've never been. So I love it. It was just like the reminder that it never did get that far with them. So I really love that a lot. How about when we go to favorite scenes? What kind of things were your total favorite scenes? Kristen, how about yours?
I really loved, we've talked about it pretty much in depth, but the Inara Mal scene where they talk about the bobblehead geisha dolls, because it was so telling of their relationship and what and where they're at right now, and, you know, how they both kind of think they're manipulating each other. And I love the whole, I really like those two characters together and their interactions. So seeing them have a moment was really, really great.
Yeah, that's I love it. I love it. I just want to go out and get a bobble-headed geisha doll now. I don't know why, but I just do.
Me too.
Caitlin, how about you?
My favorite scene is the Simon and River in the infirmary with Jane. I was going to make this like my favorite line, but Simon has this entire monologue that's really great while he's moving around, and Jane's just, the only thing he can move is his eyes. And I love when he's going, you know, anybody out there? And River peeks in, and he's like, anybody else? And then she's just standing there. And at the very end, of course, is the also, I can kill you with my brain, after Simon's walked off. Like, that's just a great scene. And obviously my Simon fangirl is showing there.
Yeah, it's okay. Oh, love that scene. My favorite is the scene with Inara at the end. It just, for again, the exact reasons that we say, and the fact that I just never, ever saw that coming at all, particularly where, you know, Saffron is questioning, like, what the hell are you doing here? And she's like, oh, just part of my job. You know, I put on a big act, storm away in a huff, then I fly off, wait for you to double-cross Mal, beat you to the rendezvous spot, grab the loot before you can get to it. What? You didn't see it coming? I just love how cool she plays the whole thing, and I just feel like it's almost like a little dig at the audience going, see, you thought this was going to be predictable and we fooled all of you. So that's why I think I love it so much. It's just so brilliant. And Joss Whedon always takes that moment where it's not what you expect. So that's why I love it in any case. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this week's episode of Rewatchable. Next week, we're going to be back with what is probably the best written and best acted episode in the entire series, which is The Message. Such a great episode. There's also a very iconic bit of clothing that is featured in that episode, and it is just so amazing on so many different levels. You're going to be hard-pressed to find a fan of Firefly that does not like that episode. You know, people have different opinions on all sorts of episodes. The one thing that they can agree upon is how amazing next week's episode, The Message, is going to be. So just to recap for you how you can get in touch with us here, you can send us an email at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can send us a tweet at re_watchable, or you can post over on hypeable.com over in the podcast section. And while I'm thinking of it, folks, if you're listening to us over on iTunes, please go give us a rating over there. Give us a thumbs up if you're enjoying listening to this podcast and would like to let others know why you are enjoying hearing our take on rewatching our favorite television shows. So until the next time, I'm Laura.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Kristen.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.